Welcome to the Canadian Nutrition Society podcast, Nutrition Conversations, a podcast dedicated to exploring the latest research in nutrition and health in Canada. In each episode, we invite expert guests to share their insight and knowledge on a wide range of topics, from dietary patterns to sports nutrition, food insecurity, and food sustainability. Whether you're looking to improve your own health and wellness, or simply stay up to date on the latest developments in the field of nutrition, we hope you'll join us on this journey to better understand the role food plays in our lives. Please note that the views expressed by speakers in CNS podcasts are those of the speaker and not necessarily of CNS. Sitting in the host chair in this episode is the program manager of the Canadian Malnutrition Task Force, Rupinder Dhaliwal, who'll be talking to Dr. Jesse Hulst and Dinah Keynes on Episode 9, Season 2 of Nutrition Conversations about transforming pediatric malnutrition care.
Hello, Nutrition Conversations listeners. Malnutrition in Canada is an overlooked health issue that can have a huge impact on individuals and the healthcare system. When it comes to pediatric malnutrition, the stakes are even higher, calling for urgent transformation in how we address and prevent it. The Canadian Malnutrition Task Force, a group of clinicians, researchers, and decision makers, has been advancing nutrition care research and education to address the prevention, detection, and treatment of malnutrition across many health sectors. I'm delighted to be talking to our speakers today, Dr. Jesse Hulst, staff physician in the Division of Gastroenterology at the Hospital for Sick Children, who is also an associate professor in the Department of Pediatrics and Nutritional Sciences at the University of Toronto, and Dinah Kalnins, Director of Clinical Dietetics at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. Dr. Hulst previously served as a staff gastroenterologist at Sophia Children's Hospital in Rotterdam, Netherlands. Her PhD focused on nutritional assessment in critically ill patients and the development of a nutritional screening tool, Strong Kids. She has authored more than 100 peer-reviewed publications and has been involved in the implementation of the Dutch Malnutrition Task Force Pediatric Malnutrition Pathway and mandatory national hospital quality indicators. Dinah is a registered dietitian and the head of the clinical dietetic department at SickKids, which includes the best breastfeeding program. She is a strong advocate for supporting evidence-based practice and has engaged her clinical dietetics team in caring safely practices, as well as quality improvement initiatives. She also works in the Cystic Fibrosis Clinic and the Lung Transplant Program, and has also co-authored and authored several publications related to CF, as well as several books on infant and children's nutrition. Jesse and Dinah, I've had the pleasure of working with you as part of CMTF's Pediatric Working Group, and welcome both of you to Episode 9 of Season 2 of Nutrition Conversations, Transforming Pediatric Malnutrition Care.
Thank you, Rupinder, for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Rupinder. Thank you.
Thank you. The pleasure is ours. So, Jesse and Dinah, both of your interests focus on nutrition risk and malnutrition identification and treatment in children. Jesse, can you tell me how you became interested in malnutrition? And then Dinah will ask you.
Sure, thank you. So before I answer this question, I just want to clarify first that our interest and focus are actually on hospitalized pediatric patients and children with a chronic medical condition, the so-called disease-associated malnutrition. And the topic of today is not really about food insecurity, but that's of course also an important topic, but it's not our expertise, although in some of the children with disease-associated malnutrition, and this may also play a role. So we have eye for it, but it's not the focus of today. So how I became interested. So yeah, I've been interested in nutrition for a long, long time, and especially ways to improve nutritional status and first assess it. So during my early clinical years, I've seen multiple cases of children with poor nutritional status and how that can negatively affect their outcomes in terms of complications or recovery or how their disease progresses. And also, of course, their well-being and functioning in daily life. So we know that, you know, malnutrition can have a negative effect on many organs in the body and also the brain. And in children, that's especially relevant because children need to grow and develop. So I think we really, my aim is to really kind of recognize these children and then treat as best as possible, but also to prevent things from happening. So another kind of point I wanted to make was that about 20 years ago now, as you mentioned, my PhD project focused on finding the right nutritional assessment parameters for critically ill children. And we also try to follow up patients and see how they were doing after such an intense, like, sick period. So that further kind of fueled my interest in malnutrition. And then I've been kind of involved in this area and developed this screening instrument that's really simple to identify patients in the hospital that need further assessment by a dietitian to come up with an appropriate plan. I think I'm still really enthusiastic and committed to try to advance the knowledge of nutrition and malnutrition specifically for our trainees and other healthcare professionals and to optimize care through education and research.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Jesse. Thank you for your passion. We're lucky to have people like you.
Thanks.
Dinah, would you like to tell us a little bit about how you became interested in malnutrition?
Yeah, when I thought about this question more and more, I thought that's why I went into the profession, because it really is about supporting healthy food choices, healthy nutrition. And early on in my training, when I had the opportunity to be in a pediatric hospital setting, that I knew that's where my career would be. Just the impact that nutrition can have on sick children when they're in their disease state, and just their recovery was really just brought out that passion in me. And then later on, when I became involved in the area of cystic fibrosis, there were incredible connections between improved nutrition and outcomes related to their disease state. And it was one of the disease states where it was so clearly evident. So the conversation among team members was, how can we improve nutrition, because we know that'll improve their lung function. So in addition to that, also just clinically looking, when you're looking after young infants, young children, you see the impact that nutrition can have when you're correcting some of their malnutrition issues. It's almost immediate when you see that kind of impact. And if you follow them more long term, it's so gratifying to see how when well supported, the impact that can have on the child, on the family. And it's just been a passion and has never left me.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Thanks, Dinah. So Jesse, you mentioned this, and Dinah, both you've sort of touched on this about the negative impacts of malnutrition. We know that pediatric malnutrition or undernutrition is defined as an imbalance between nutrient needs and intake. We know that it results in cumulative deficits in energy, protein, and other micronutrients, and it can, like you said, negatively affect growth. Can you elaborate on a little bit more on why malnutrition is a concern in Canada? And Jesse, if you could start off, that would be lovely. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point to discuss further. Indeed. Yeah, I think what's been shown in the past, like multiple years by several studies across the world, actually, is that the prevalence of disease-associated malnutrition is actually quite high in all areas of the world, in developed countries, specifically the topic of today, I would say. And a recent Canadian study, fairly recent, 2019, found the prevalence of up to one in every three hospitalized children to be show signs of malnutrition on admission to the hospital. And it always depends a little bit how you look at malnutrition. So this was a very advanced method to look at it with the dietitian's assessment. But international data are quite similar. And when you use like methods like weight or height, Z-scores, like based on the child's like reference values, usually you find 15 to 20% of the heterogeneous population. So any patient that comes in, but the numbers can actually be much higher in children with like specific underlying conditions, such as, you know, for example, children with congenital cardiac anomalies, that the percentages are higher. And it's also known that healthcare professionals or caregivers or the community, they may not always be aware that malnutrition is an actual problem and would not recognize it or not focus on it, because often the focus of a child that gets admitted to the hospital is more on the disease or the problems that brings them in, which may not be the nutrition, but for example pneumonia, but the child may also have malnutrition in addition to it. And that's kind of understandable, but that's why we kind of advocate to look further. And we also know that why it is another concern is that we have seen that patients who are admitted in the hospital can actually deteriorate in terms of nutritional status. So you can be good when you come in, but especially with the longer you stay in the hospital, there's reasons why your nutritional status decreases, and there can be multiple reasons for this. So for example, like disease or patient-related factors, that they're not able to eat and drink as well during hospital because they're sick, because they don't have appetite, because they have pain when they eat, or sometimes more like process factors like the hospital, the patients need to go for multiple tests, so they cannot eat and drink, or they don't like the food in the hospital, but also more related to the disease itself, if they are vomiting, if they're losing nutrients, if they're having severe diarrhea, or in some diseases, it can also be that the needs are actually much higher than in a healthy child. We call that hypermetabolism, and these children have increased energy needs. For example, in patients with very high increased or an increased work of breathing with, for example, pneumonia or cystic fibrosis. Those patients need a lot more. And then there's, on the other hand, these are all like the patient and disease factors. There's also hospital factors that can contribute to why children deteriorate during their hospital stay, which can be a lack of protocols or expertise or resources, depending on the setting. I think that is why it is a concern, and specifically maybe in children. We know that that children are at higher risk even than adults. They don't have a lot of reserves typically, and they need a lot of calories per gram body weight. I think these are some of the factors that really kind of allude to that this is a concern.
Dinah, would you like to add your thoughts to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree with everything Jesse says, and included in that is, we know that malnutrition can affect the length of stay during an admission. And there's a real focus on, treating patients in hospital and getting them home as quickly as possible. So we're really looking at factors like length of stay. If you look in the literature in the 70s, 80s, I was just looking at this before this podcast, there's a lot of literature out there talking about the impact of malnutrition on hospitalized patients and what happens when they go home. And just to add to that, I know a lot of Jesse's work was it doesn't end in the hospital. Like, we can treat malnutrition. We have experts here, but then what happens when they go home? And we see the lack of support in some instances when we follow up these patients and they come back to our clinic, and we see that there wasn't the appropriate follow-up, perhaps by individuals that they're just not set up in the community to help support and continue the plan that they have. So while we set patients up for success, when they go home, things happen. And if they're not seen on a regular basis, time can go by and then they don't get the supports they need. So I think that's something that we in general still have to work on is our community. And a lot of great work's being done in that respect, but we know we still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, thanks for identifying that. Dinah, what does malnutrition look like in a child? How might it look like? I know years ago, many years ago, when I was practicing as a dietitian, in adults, you know, this term was first identified as the skeleton in the closet, and but that really pertains to adults. Can you elaborate on how malnutrition might look like in children?
Yeah, sure. Well, fortunately. We have you know, a lot of centers now are gone to electronic health charts, and we have growth charts, and we use those growth charts, and we do our best to make sure that everybody understands how to use those growth charts. And that gives you a picture of a child's growth pattern, their health, especially if you have some serial measures. And even if you don't, with a lot of literature identifying use of Z scores, use of BMI percentiles in children, looking at growth, weight gain, height, velocity. These are all terms that we're really, and through Jesse and her colleagues and studies that are going on, making this common language for everybody so that we understand how to interpret certain values. So you may not have serial measurements, you may have just one or two, but you can then still use other measures that help support nutritional assessment. You really do need skilled personnel to be able to encourage use, communicate use of these tools so that you can help other healthcare professionals who aren't trained in nutrition to be able to support the assessment and then obviously the treatment. And I'll say it again, it's a team approach. I'm encouraged to see that it's not just let's call in the dietitian, we have an issue. It's the whole team talks about nutrition, what can be done to impact the care and to support improvement in nutritional status if we have that.
Yeah. Would you say, Dinah, that it's not always obvious then one to pick up that a child may be malnourished?
It may not be, and it may be. Sometimes I go in a clinic room and I don't need to see a growth chart. I can just visualize whether it's an infant, I look at their thighs. If you look at a younger child, you might look at their upper body. You can look at their limbs. There are certain things you can do and you appreciate, what their status is. And then you ask the right questions. You can ask, what their intake has been. I think Jesse's going to add to that too, but for children, you can visualize, and there's other issues like growth stunting that may make the child look quite appropriate, but you know that they're still not in a great nutritional state. So there's a lot of information that we have as nutritional experts that we need to continue to translate to our colleagues so that it can be identified for those where that malnutrition state may not be that obvious. I think, Jesse, you wanted to add something to that too.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it now that I think, especially in children who are stunted and you don't know their age, for example, they may look actually quite well, and that can be tricky sometimes. And also children who, you know, who accumulate like fluid for another reason, for example, children with hepatic conditions or cardiac condition, they may have edema, and then the weight is kind of like falsely high, and it doesn't say much about their nutritional status. So then you need other tools to, and our eyes as well, to really assess their nutritional status.
I recall, if I could add here, a time when we were discussing in rounds an infant, and a healthcare provider said, "Oh, I think they need a gastrostomy tube." And I remember I was very new in my career, and I just said, "Have you looked at the baby?" Because they had a measurement that was an error. And so based on the paper measurements, they assumed that this child would need some support. But if you actually went in the room and looked at this child, you could actually see that doesn't make sense. So I think that visual is really, really essential when you're assessing nutrition.
Thank you both. Jesse, CMTF, you're the co-chair of the pediatric working group, and CMTF is known to be the national voice for addressing malnutrition across Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about what key pediatric malnutrition initiatives you've been involved in and are working on?
Of course.
I know there's a lot, but if you can
I'll summarize a little bit. Yeah.
Them. Yes.
I think in general, because we know that it is accepted that malnutrition should be prevented or promptly identified and treated, like all our initiatives are kind of in that topic, that we try to aim for that. So our pediatric working group started in 2018, and just to give a little bit of background, it consists of 17, I think, active members currently, and it's representatives from many provinces, and also it's a multidisciplinary group with dietitians, nurses, and pediatricians. We've had quite a lot of kind of initiatives and projects. So I will mention a couple. So we started off with a national survey in 15, I think, tertiary pediatric centers about current practices and policies around nutritional assessment and malnutrition care in those hospitals. And this has been published as a paper in 2021. And what we found was that about 90% of the patients mentioned that they don't really have an overarching nutrition protocol about malnutrition. They do have like certain parts of the whole process in place, for example, about measuring, and most hospitals do have that. We also saw that screening tools are hardly ever used. So screening tool is a way to quickly assess if a patient is at risk of malnutrition. And it's typically like 4 questions that can be asked by a nurse, and it helps to direct kind of the patients to further assessment by a dietitian, and then typically, if needed, a more individualized nutrition plan. So that is not like a routine yet in hospitals. And we also found that that especially the follow-up, what Dinah was alluding to in terms of what happens after discharge, that there's a lot of work to do there to try to kind of increase these pathways after discharge. So that was the survey, and that was kind of the basis for our further work. So then we contributed to the pediatric parts of the HSO standard, malnutrition prevention, detection, and treatment. That was also in 2021. So that was really good that we incorporated pediatric aspects in this overall standard in Canada. Then our work focused a little bit all in preparation of the pathway that we were developing to, we updated what's called the subjective global nutritional assessment. So that is a way to do like an abbreviated nutritional assessment, and it looks at history and some components of physical exam, and it's typically done by dietitians, but the version that was available needed a little bit of update with more modern terminology. So this is what we succeeded in, and it was published in 2022. And yeah, I think other initiatives that are worth mentioning is that the Canadian Malnutrition Task Force website has now like a good amount of pediatric content, and we all collaborated to contribute to that. So there was a really nice team effort. And I think also the whole group has been very active in giving multiple presentations at conferences, webinars, grand rounds across the Canada and also beyond, in like collaboration with other like malnutrition groups in the North American societies and European societies. Yeah, other things I can go on for a little bit, but I think most importantly is that we developed what we call the PINPEC pathway. So it's a pathway that is kind of we learned from the adult impact pathway, and it's an algorithm that we developed with the pediatric working group, and it aims to prevent, detect, and monitor and treat malnutrition in acute pediatric patients. And it has various steps. So the first step is screening, so to identify patients at risk with a simple questionnaire and also routine anthropometry, like weights and heights, and then do assessment, which is SDNA, and then the next step is nutrition treatment and follow-up. So all these components are part of the pathway. And this pathway is now also what we are studying in a pilot study that we started in 2023. And we've studied the first two steps, so only screening and assessment at three different sites in Canada, pediatric sites. And we will present about the initial results in the upcoming Canadian Malnutrition Awareness Week. I don't know if I can allude a little bit on the results here, Rupinder. So, yeah, in this study, we try to, as I mentioned, implement like a nutrition screening tool, typically done by nurses. And the preliminary results show that that is feasible, also to improve like the performance of routine measurements, such as weight and height in the patients. And especially what was a big advantage was that we were able to incorporate screening and actually to flagging patients who are at high risk in our electronic medical record. And that's a real plus, I think, for any hospital if that is possible. So that will help, you know, the whole process going forward.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your work, from starting off with a survey to see what current practices are, all the way to doing these feasibility studies. So that's a thank you for that enormous amount of work, and we're looking forward to hearing more. We hear a lot about barriers when it comes to trying to improve nutrition in hospitalized patients in general. Given your extensive experience, Jesse, in research, clinical practice, implementation, can you share what the most common barriers have been in improving, you know, care for pediatrics around malnutrition in hospitals?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I think barriers are recognized across the world in all hospitals. So it's not unique to a specific hospital. And that's what kind of previous surveys and studies have highlighted. And yeah, you can categorize it a little bit like, first of all, awareness that there's, as I alluded to before, there's suboptimal awareness of the role of nutrition actually in patient care. And I think it's growing, and we do our best to advocate for it. But we all know that the education about nutrition in our professional training of doctors, of nurses, is quite limited. And I think, yeah, we have to keep advocating to increase that. So that's one of the barriers. The other barriers is related to personnel or resources, that there may be shortage of personnel to routinely do all the measurements and screening. There's a lot of tasks that everyone has to do in the hospital, so that can be difficult. Also, barriers to integrate kind of the nutrition growth, the growth charts in an electronic medical record or the questions for the screening. But I think we learn more and more about that it's really feasible. Another point could be the equipment that needs to be well maintained, and that can also be a barrier. And then I think one of the other group of barriers is the lack of agreed policies and protocols. So like who's responsible for which item of nutrition care, because nutrition is everywhere. So it's important to make sure that that we know who's responsible for which steps, and to also the clinical pathways to follow, like from the hospital admission to discharge. I think there's some work to do there, which we are working on now also with the pathway. But these are kind of the barriers that I think most studies and surveys show.
Yeah. So certainly seems like a long multifactorial, lots of factors in play. We would like to know how we can overcome these barriers and these challenges. And Diana, I'm going to ask you, but I'm also going to actually combine it with the next question that we were going to ask, which is around our Canadian Malnutrition Task Force's promotional campaign, which is called Canadian Malnutrition Awareness Week, which is October 7th to the 11th. And as you know, we have webinars and educational, materials created. And the theme this year is advocate, collaborate, and transform. And as I listen to the barriers that Jesse has listed, I'm wondering if you can shed some highlight your thoughts on how can we get others working together to overcome these barriers, to advocate for malnutrition, and can we transform nutrition care for hospitalized children? I know that's a big question, but maybe if you can just share your insights and your thoughts around that.
Sure. You combined it so well, Rupinder, with the next question too. It's about education. It really is, and strong teamwork. So speaking just even here from SickKids, we've got many experts in nutrition, and our teams are asking more and more for them to share this expertise. So anytime we have new fellows, new nurses, there's a lot of education that goes around on the nutrition support in that specific program and area. We do some general talks as well, but we do these routine sessions so that we educate what we know, because it's not enough for us to know it. What we really want is everyone to be talking again the same language, to be using the same kind of identifiable nutrition markers that we can speak to and that we can all support together. So it's really about getting the message out, working together, showing the impact. And you know what? It's maybe we know how busy a hospital ward is. We know how busy our nurses are. So getting a height and getting a weight, sometimes we help them with that. Other team members can help with getting these measurements. Sometimes it's doing a midarm circumference if you don't have the height or weight, depending on the patient's situation. There's a lot more that we can do. And again, it comes down to time and resources. But I think if it's a priority, and I think for most of the teams, if not all here at SickKids, I could speak to that. Malnutrition is important to them. There's just a lot more that we could do in sharing the knowledge that we have on how important it is and what we can do about it. So,
yeah. Go ahead, Jesse.
So I think just to add that we are working, of course, on all these tools that that could be helpful for implementing and making it easier to address malnutrition. So, there's some more work we are doing on that, but that's aimed to help hospital wards to make it more feasible even. And I think one other factor I just wanted to mention was the role of parents. So parents can also be advocates for their children, and we try to also engage them in our work with CMTF to make sure that they are aware that we look at their nutritional status, and so it can be a topic that they also talk about, for example, in daily rounds with the teams, and that will also, I think, further increase that people pay attention.
And in just 30 seconds, Jesse, can you share any resources that our listeners, might be interested in around pediatric malnutrition care?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the website of the Canadian Malnutrition Task Force, the pediatric part of it, has a lot of kind of information about screening, assessment, implementation, and treatment. And it will be further updated once we finalize our pilot study with an implementation toolkit that's based on the results. Other websites in Canada are the Dietitians of Canada. They have handouts about various nutrition topics, including malnutrition. There's also the American Society of Parenteral and Enteronutrition, ASPEN, that has a malnutrition solution center where adult and pediatric resources are available. And then, of course, the upcoming webinar that we will be talking about the first results of our PIMPEC pilot study. I would welcome everyone to join that.
Yeah, thank you. And that webinar, just so that everybody knows, is on October the 8th, and it's called Transforming Pediatric Malnutrition Care. Thank you so much, Jesse and Dinah, for your insights, for sharing your experiences. The takeaway messages that I got for our listeners are that malnutrition does exist in hospitalized children in Canada and in children with chronic medical conditions. It's not always obvious, but sometimes it is, visually you can tell. There are simple tools like nutrition risk screening that can help identify these children who are at risk and that can benefit from nutrition. We know that the PINPAC study is going to show us some cutting edge results on how to implement these nutrition, pathways. And that the multidisciplinary approach is really, really important in transforming pediatric malnutrition care. So thank you again for such a great conversation, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rupinder. Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Nutrition Conversations. We hope that you found today's discussion informative and inspiring. If you're interested in hearing more about the latest research in nutrition and health, be sure to check out our website at cns-scn.ca/podcast for upcoming episodes. You can find us on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Simply search for the Nutrition Conversations podcast on your favorite app, and you'll have access to all our episodes in one place. We release new episodes at the end of each month, so mark your calendars and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.